Hi, Joe. Did we, I wonder if people have got their board packets.
Yeah, I have mine. I got mine a few days ago.
That's great. Okay.
I think I probably got it on Saturday or something like that.
That's good. We do, for the most part, they're getting out, but there was a couple of times this year, the mail has been real slow, and one of the board packets took several days to arrive. Now I'm a little nervous about it, but I know these went out a week ago, so I'm glad you have
Yeah. No, I got mine. I think, and also I live very much, you could walk it over to my house.
Do you think people need a reminder of the meeting?
We've been doing it like this for a while now. I don't know. I can ask about it tonight. And, mean, I know about a main board meeting, but I think everybody's life is busy, so
True.
All right, I'm back. Okay. Well, the link that I used to sign in was the link from the minutes. I don't know if the link was sent out to everybody.
That's great. So it worked. That, okay, great. You had the right one. I just sent out a reminder,
Okay.
couple more minutes.
It's surprising that some of the regulars have not shown yet.
I think we did, we've gotten in this habit of sending out a reminder, and I didn't do that. I don't know if Stephanie had done that, but I did it just now, so we'll see. Yeah, that signal is really weak. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Elaine.
Hey, Joe. Hi, everybody.
Okay.
People wait till the last minute, don't they?
Oh, yes.
I'm just hoping that they're coming.
Yeah. Lynn, are you in the, you're not in the building, are you, at Brookins?
I am. I'm sitting in the hallway outside the Putman room, which is the listed for today. But my internet access.
Oh, okay. I couldn't recognize your background.
Yeah. This is the, there's the Putman room. And there's the doors to the parking lot. And my internet connection is a little iffy. Joe and I got kicked off a minute ago, so I'm nervous about it. Fingers crossed.
Oh. Yeah. So it was just testing.
Yeah.
Hi, Pat.
Your screen keeps freezing and your voice is going in and out.
I have very... Yes, I have very weak internet because I'm not in the meeting room. I'm out in the hall. If I had a person with me, I'd move all my stuff back to the office, but it's quite a walk and I've got quite a bit of stuff. Maybe it's worth it to do. I'll just do that because the meeting room is locked.
So, Elaine, you and I are the only board members right now.
I see that, but surely, have you had any excused absences?
No. Nothing as of now.
Yeah, well, I haven't been in touch with anybody, so I don't know what's going on.
So we'll wait a few more minutes, and I hate to wait to keep you waiting.
Yeah. Well, a couple of our people are always a little bit late, right?
Yeah. Just oh, yeah. And John gets up pretty much about now, so
yeah,
it takes a while.
Yeah.
It's also very hard for me to admit people to the meeting.
Okay, we got two, Jane and.
I had to move. Pieces of stuff down the hall to get back to actual functional internet.
So we have only four board members as of now. So is that enough? We need five.
No, we need five for the quorum, but you can go ahead and get started if you want. You have a quorum, you won't be able to approve the agenda.
We're not voting on anything, right? It's a study session.
It's so a study session.
We can take information. Am I correct about that?
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's the rule.
So if you want to start, I've moved. So I was outside the Putman room as per the posted board information, but the room was locked and the internet wasn't stable enough. So I've moved back into the office. So I think we're still in compliance with the Open Meetings Act.
Okay.
And I looked around before I left that area and there was no one coming to participate in the meeting. So I think we're good to start.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started. Let's call to order. Stephanie, can you do a roll call, please?
Susan Fowler, Tom Moore, Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson. Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Jane Sprandel.
Here.
Kathleen Worth Couch. John Paul Joachim. Joe Omo Osagie.
Here. So, is there citizen input or participation right now? Looks like no one. So since we don't have a quorum, can we approve the agenda or can we just come back to that later?
Back to it later.
Okay. So we'll come back to the approving the agenda later because we don't want to keep people waiting. I don't have much to say. There will be some changes happening on the board and we'll see you in February when those changes occur. I mean, I'm going to miss Tom. I'm going to miss Tom and his probing questions. So let's get the study session started. Champaign County Christian Health Center, are you ready to present?
Yep, absolutely. Let me, I do have access to share my screen, right?
Yes, you do.
Can I see some familiar faces there? I see Julian. Hi, Julian.
Hello.
And also Pat Egge. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Crystal. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good seeing you. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. I think that most of you already know what we do, let me just look here, know who we are. So I'm not gonna go too much into our organization because I believe that you guys know pretty much and we have only 15 minutes, is that right?
I would have cut you off right away, don't worry.
Sorry?
I will not cut you off right away.
Okay, I don't know, I talk a lot, so.
Well then, maybe.
Okay, yeah, you have to cut me off. Crystal, that's enough. Okay, so Champaign County Christian Health. So I'm going to just fast forward through this because Jeff Trass is actually the founder of the organization. So he usually does the history of the organization. So I'm going to just fast forward through this. We provide free, holistic quality health care for the uninsured and underinsured patients in our community. We've been doing that since 2003. Here's a list of our board members right now. we're going to be adding maybe a few more. Here are some of our team members there, and I'll talk a little bit more in detail about each area. This is where we used to be, an office here. I am the exec director of Champaign County Christian Health Center, and Jeff is the fund director as well as the founder, and Carrie Allen's also part of AmeriCorps Vista, if you're familiar with AmeriCorps. Okay, we'll just fast forward through this and I'll get to the update. Just to kind of go over some of the diversity of our patients at CCCHC, we provide care to everyone in need, of course, racial diversity, low income, homeless, various religious backgrounds, ages 18 to 64, various educational levels, open to all backgrounds, traditions, ethnicities, sexual orientation, races, et cetera, et cetera. One of our rooms. Okay, so getting into more of the scope of our services, we provide primary care, nursing care, triage, health education, discharge, social work specializing in mental health, free lab services, psychologists. We've partnered just recently with Grow, a nutritionist, spiritual care for prayer and counseling, prescriptions, referral services, specialty care, other client needs, and telehealth services. And this is where I'm going to start expounding a bit on. So as we all know that, you know, since COVID hit, it's been a little, you know, challenging for all of us as clinics, and actually for everyone in the world. And we were having some discussion about implementing EHR, which we did not have EHR before. And so since COVID hit, we decided to, this would be the great time to do that. So we started telehealth services. This is an additional service that we just added on in March of this year. Which allows our patients to talk to a healthcare provider via audio or via video. And the thing about that we actually provided clinical hours, operational hours on every Tuesday night between 5 and 8:30 or so, and then every second and fourth Wednesday. But since COVID hit, we decided to increase our hours, making it from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So that way our patients have access to a telehealth provider at all times. And of course, as I said before, we see the uninsured patients in our community, giving them access to a telehealth provider now. Because all of our doctors are actually, they're providing, they're at home working on the phone, video, calling prescriptions and refills and so forth. Now, this picture here is actually a picture of us at the Champaign Public Library in the Pavilion Room. And I believe that the Community Coalition used to meet here once a month before COVID hit. And so this is the same room. They got it where it's in social distancing. You see nurses and doctors and psychologists there right now during our EHR training. This is just this past September, October. So, we implemented EHR, which is electronic health records, and launched something called Athena Health. It's an EHR system. We launched it on October the 21st. But prior to that, we wanted to make sure that we train all the staff, all the volunteers, started in September, to get them more familiar with the system. We were doing paper charting, of course, and then we went to EHR. And not everyone likes EHR. They're not as technical savvy. So that was definitely a challenge, especially dealing with older providers as well. But we felt like this was the best route to go, being that the crisis are all in right now. And so to give you a little bit about the Athena Health System, it's an integrated service that works to deliver measurable financial and clinical results for more than 160,000 providers on the Athena Health Network system. We found this place. I went to a conference, I believe it was 2019 at the NAFC conference, and I was able to speak with some of them at the table there. They offered this for a lot of the free clinics there. And those of you who don't know NAFC, that is a National Association of Free and Charitable Clinics. And so that's how I discovered Athena Health. And at that time, I was considering it prior to COVID hit. And so this right here just shows a picture of one of our psychologists. He wanted to be able to offer mental health services during this time, which is what we were doing before. We had one psychologist, Dr. Rill, who is a psychologist at Carl. So he's not able to prescribe, of course, but he's a psychologist that's able to offer mental health counseling to our patients. He's been available for our patients actually monthly, but I'm going to get a little bit more in detail about what we're trying to do in the mental health aspect to expand our services. Because right now, we only have Dr. Real and also a social worker specialized in mental health. So, of course, you have collaborations and partnerships such as Promise Healthcare and Francis Nelson, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as well. We also have OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Space and Lab. Now, those pictures that you saw before, that's where we used to be. We were in the Community Resource Center, also known as CRC, along with other volunteer agencies such as Faith in Action for the Seniors, and also I believe it was one of Promise Healthcare satellite there. But since COVID hit, they went through changes, and so all of us were kind of, you know, we're unable to continue offering our services to our patients there. So now we're just strictly offering just telehealth. We do not have a building as of yet. We'll be working on that. Also, Carl Hospital, we've partnered with them as far as free lab testing for our patients, partnering with Montesina, Hermes, Hope Clinic, Public Health Department. I think we used to do something there as well, and Jeff could have talked a little bit more about that. And then, of course, partnering with Quest Diagnostic and Lab Services, where they partner with us with for a discounted rate. And then, of course, the IAFCC, which is the Illinois Association of Free and Charitable Clinics. That's a VISTA program that Carrie Allen was part of. Okay, so the telehealth patient numbers we were seeing prior to COVID was 135 patients. And that's the screening, the referring, and then patients, since of course the total is 174 patients that we have seen since COVID hit. And I will say that it's been really great to be able to continue to offer these types of services for our patients, even though it's not in person. It's nothing like being in person, but to be able to still offer that for our patients has really helped a great deal. And then to also see that our providers are available, they have their full-time jobs, and yet they're still able to take time out to talk to the patient over the phone or through video or call in prescriptions and also labs as needed. So this just shows that we're how we're trying to expand here for our telehealth services in 2019. We were seeing about 778 patients. And then when COVID hit, before COVID, as I said, it shows the chart here, 135, and then after, and then the total here. As far as the mental health patients that we've seen in 2019, it was 77. And then we have, before COVID, 12. And then after COVID, we had 27, total of 77. So we still continue to see our patients even during the crisis. So, you know, as we see these patients, we do see that there's different needs that these patients have, and we do want to be able to provide holistic quality healthcare services to our patients by offering mental health and spiritual care counseling and, you know, seeing a nutritionist or provider or even a dentist, because we also offer dental as well. For the uninsured and underinsured. And then we want to expand and add, of course, a psychiatrist, and we're going to partner. In fact, we're right in an agreement with Promise Healthcare to be able to partner with their residency program that they currently have right now. We've been partnering with them for the last couple of years where we refer patients to them, the patient that we cannot see because of their medical condition or medical issues, we do refer them over to Promise Healthcare as well. We also have partnered with Grow, and I know that some of you know Grow. Before COVID hit, we were able to support our mental health patients by allowing our patients to, you know, be connected with some of the members at Grow. Okay, so as far as our mid-year progress, our goal is to be able to increase our mental health and expand it, as I mentioned before. So we do have access to the psychologist, as I mentioned, one counselor, still recruiting for more. There are a couple of things that we're working on right now with other partnerships, trying to develop more partnerships, maybe for some retired physicians, retired psychologists and psychiatrists. So we're also working with Carl's residency program. We used to have a psychiatrist there, actually it was a couple, and I know some of you might know them or not, but it was Dr. Welch and his wife. They used to be a part of our organization years ago, so we're trying to grab them back. And so it's going to be ongoing, trying to expand in this particular area. So really, that's pretty much all I had. Yeah, so that's pretty much what we've been doing since COVID hit. Do I have any questions or anything? And this is actually a picture of our team. This is some of our members here that volunteer. So.
Yeah, I have a question. So are all of you, this is Elaine Valencia, are all of your providers volunteer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and when you say you partner with GROW, that's one of, you know, the other organizations we fund. Can you say a little more about what that partnership, how that works?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I met with GROW, I think it was Karen and the other guy.
Chris?
Chris? Yes. So I met with them before COVID hit, and what they were doing, they were able to we actually partnered with them by allowing them to come to our clinic during the hours of operations. And so we had access to the Community Resource Center. So some of our mental health patients were able to send them to their group and meet with them while they were there. So we had a couple of people that were experiencing, you know, issues, addictions, different things. And so that's the way that we were able to partner with GROW, because, you know, that's what they do, the support, and we needed that piece in the mental health.
Okay, so you're kind of referring, it's kind of a referral arrangement?
Yes, a referral
right,
arrangement.
With GROW?
Yes, and then as patients come, we distribute their brochures.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
When you were in the physical space, you were providing them with physical space, right?
Yes, we were.
Sending them somewhere.
Absolutely, because we had a lot of offices back there on certain parts of the facility. We had an area for the, and I can back up a little bit, but we had an area there for the dental clinic as well as for social work and offices for the psychologists. So GROW would be in one of those offices there to be able to meet with the patients.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just trying to back up and see it. Yeah, and this area too as well, they would be over here. And yeah, so a lot of people don't really know what we do and, you know, and how much we offer. I mean, because we're a small organization, but we are looking to do a lot more based on the needs of our patients. So being able to have more partnerships with the residency program at Promise Healthcare, being able to recruit retired physicians or retired psychologists and psychiatrists as well. That's gonna be very beneficial because we wanna be able to offer more hours due to Dr. Rill's schedule. I mean, he's extremely busy with his full-time job, but I wanna be able to give more to our patients based on the needs. Other questions? And I think And I will say, I think one thing that has really, that I wasn't too sure about the EHR system, because most of our providers, you know, they're so used to the paper charting. And so that was a challenge. So we're all still learning the system, and being able to partner with Athena Health has really helped us a great deal to be able to use their system for our patients. Because now we could just type in the patient's name, flipping information, and the system allows us to have medical record sharing, which means that if the patient was seen at Carl or seen at Christy, we can pull over the patient's medical history and have that, which would be helpful for our providers. Yeah. Yep. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Thank you. If there are any other questions or comments, Thank you, Crystal.
You're welcome.
So next we would have Cunningham Children's Home. Families Together, Stronger Together.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for making time for us tonight. My name is Marie Duffin, and I'm the Associate Director of Family Services, and I have the privilege of supervising the Family Stronger Together program.
Marie?
Oh, can you hear me?
I know I can barely hear you. Is that just me, or can we all hear?
No, I'm having trouble hearing.
I'm so glad you let me know. We did some testing this afternoon, and it sounded okay then. Does it help when I hold this closer to my mouth?
That's yes. Much better.
Okay, yes. So I may not get to gesture the way that I wish to, but the most important thing is that I will be heard.
Thank you. And that's what we want you. We want to hear you.
Thank you, Joe, for giving me that heads up. So I was trying to introduce myself. My name is Marie Duffin, and I'm the Associate Director of Family Services in the Community Services Department at Cunningham Children's Home. And I have the privilege of supervising the Family Stronger Together program. With me tonight from Cunningham are many other bright stars. All of you know our beloved Pat Eggy. She'll also be presenting partially tonight with me. And then Mansi Deshmukh, she is one of our family therapists on the team, and she helped so much with preparing the presentation, the slides and the attachments tonight. Thank you so much, Mansi. And then my supervisor, Ann Piercy, is joining by phone tonight. So there's four of us here. I'll be the main speaker, but of course you'll also hear from Pat. Pat, do you wish to speak and say hello now, or do you want me to just keep going? Okay, just wanted to make sure there's room for you. So we have prepared slides, but before I even start that, I want to tell you from my heart just what a privilege it has been to be a part of this program from its conception to its implementation. It's a real challenge and a real inspiration every single day to show up and try to figure out how we can best be good stewards of the gift that you have given us to serve the families in Champaign County. I've worked at Cunningham Children's Home for 22 years, and I have always longed for having a program that was focused solely on Champaign County. I've made my home here since 1995, and it's just been great. As we've done our work with Families Stronger Together, we've gotten to know far more intimately the resources that are in our county, and we have so much to offer. And I'm really proud to say that our Family Stronger Together program has been able to help in, with engagement so that we can link people to the services that our county offers. So I'll tell you more as we go on, but I just wanted to tell you before I even got the business of the slides, where I stand with being a part of this project. So, thank you. So I'm gonna share screen. And okay, so this is our program. You all got to hear from me in around November 2019 when we were in the dreaming scheming phase. And we landed on this name because we really wanted to help to promote the way that we focus on the entire family system. And how, yes, of course, there's a young person that comes to the attention of our program, but that we try to take a holistic approach with the entire family, and then to certainly have the spirit of the family can solve their problems so much better when they're working together. So that's the theme that we bring to all the work that we do. A little tricky. Working the mouse and holding the headset, but I think I can be flexible. So just to remind you all, since we are one of the newest programs that Champaign County Mental Health Board is funding, the purpose of our program is to serve young people aged 10 to 17 and their families who have either become involved in the juvenile justice system or who are at risk of becoming involved in the juvenile justice system. And our intention is to provide trauma-informed, culturally sensitive services that are mental health focused to help the family to achieve more of what they are trying to achieve for those young people and for their whole families. Here on this slide, we show a little bit of the content that we hope to get to today, but I'd like to move forward right away so that you have a beautiful visual image of the logic model that our team worked so hard on, Mansi in particular. Thank you, Mansi, for the work you did. We have really appreciated the resource that Champaign County Mental Health Board provides for us with the program evaluation work from the University of Illinois. There was about six of us who went to the workshop to help to create this logic model to guide what we're doing. And then we've been engaged in at least once per month, sometimes more, services with Emily Blevins from the University of Illinois to work on our outcomes and program evaluation goals. But you can see that we have a lot of intentions with our program. So we wish to provide individual and family therapy services to the families, but we also wish to help to strengthen the support network that surrounds that young person. And so whenever we interact with any adult that's in that young person's life, we try to bring the same kind of trauma-informed language so that there is a group of adults who can help this young person to recover and make choices that are more in service to their highest good. There is a lot to this logic model. It would take much longer than 15 minutes to describe it, but I wanted to show you a little bit about it. But I wanted to make sure you knew how much we are appreciating the program evaluation work. One thing that we'd like to highlight here on the bottom was about our intention to bring some trauma-informed language and training even to people who are participating in the juvenile justice system. So everyone from judges to folks that are working at the juvenile detention center and the probation court services. And needless to say, COVID-19 pandemic really impacted the original vision that we had for how we might do this. And I know that that's one of the updates that Pat Egge wants to give to you tonight is how we're sort of modifying our trauma-informed training. So Pat, I can go on to show the ARC slide now, or you can speak at this moment. What would you rather?
I'll go ahead and jump in and then you can get your the sequence going towards the program itself. So
thank you.
Thanks, Marie. Real quick, we've talked about a juvenile justice council. We're continuing to call it that, but it may end up having a different name once we get more involved in the community. Had the opportunity to meet with Tracy Parsons and Mary Catherine from the Coalition and Sam Smith, and the four of us have pulled together in November a chance to talk together as a team to begin some facilitation. I would not say it's necessarily leadership yet, but we pulled together a meeting in late November, early December, and had a panel there, and it was Judge Timberlake, who's done a lot of work in trauma. He's a retired judge. I can't remember what county he's from, but he said he did go to school at the University of Illinois Law School. And then three people from the Illinois Association and the Juvenile Justice Council Association, and a coordinator who worked in Macon County with their Juvenile Justice Council. So there's a panel, and we had 26 community members involved with that effort. Great feedback and great opportunity to hear what a juvenile justice council could look like and some of the goals. Julia Reitz was there. We hope to get a judge there next time, but we actually had another meeting in December and have not met since, but we put a lot of energy into November, December, and we'll regroup in February. So the key that came from there, and Sam Smith assigned it to me, which I'm fine with, is the coordination and linkage and the resource connection. Maria has already mentioned some of the areas of the juvenile justice system which has been impacted, and we haven't had near the relationships we probably will that we will after COVID. But that was a real important aspect for us to be able to have the community members. It was really well attended. So the next step of looking at coordination and linkage of resource, I talked to Lynn Canfield. So Lynn helped me connect with the university group that's doing the 2-1-1 work in the community. So we had an initial conversation with them, giving a chance to see what kind of resources we might need from the juvenile justice side. And then I had a really quick and a very brief preliminary discussion with somebody that is running a database system that connect the police when an event happens by address to a child, and that it can link right to the school with a school ID number. So there's no problem with names of children and youth being out there. And then there's some training on a trauma-informed side that happens at the schools where they can interface and use a trauma approach to use what they call a handle with care approach with students more live or right after an incident. So I don't have much more about that, but probably the one last piece I'd like to mention is we don't necessarily want to push the ARC training for the Juvenile Justice Council. And we want to be more open to hear what the community might see more helpful. So that's really kind of the last piece that I wanted to say. And that's where the next couple of months will lead into what kind of trauma-informed training. Are we going to call it a Juvenile Justice Council and some energy that way? But very pleased that we have a pretty significant amount of community involvement, including the ROE and Julie Reitz and several others. Any questions on that part? Because that's really, I thought would cover what we need to do for that part of the grant that we have. I think that's it, Marie. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Pat. So this is a visual reminder of the ARC treatment framework that we selected for our program. ARC stands for Attachment, Regulation, and Competency. And I must say that we've been very pleased with this choice. The flexibility of this treatment framework allows us to modify the very specific needs that the family approaches us with. And I mentioned before about how engagement is one of the hallmarks of our program. You'll notice that it's the very first block, they call them building blocks that create the structure of this house. It's the very first building block in the foundational strategies. And I'll show you more as we go on, but again, I think this is the biggest ingredient for our success for the program is because we built in this 30-day time period where the main mission and goal is to evaluate the immediate safety and risk and needs of the family and to just engage, establish rapport, and start with making linkages. And what we find is that when we meet the family's most immediate needs, there's so much more trust immediately, which helps us get to some of the more tender, vulnerable work that trauma-informed care really involves. So I'm happy to show you this image again. We show it to our families when we get to know them, letting them know sort of this is what the map of the treatment will be looking like. But it's the best way I can emphasize to you about how important the engagement piece is, and I'll talk more as we go. But before I leave this slide, I want to make mention that one of the things that's been a great benefit to us as we've begun this program is the monthly clinical and systems level consultation that we've had with one of the persons who has worked with the ARC developers. Her name is Dr. Rachel Liebman, and she provides monthly supervision to our group, which has been really critical for helping us to really embody the teachings of the ARC framework and figuring out how to really help it to work well for the families that we are working with. And so it's a space where staff spend time presenting a case. We, of course, remove identifying information to protect confidentiality. And then there is a specific consultation that Dr. Liebman provides about how the ARC treatment framework can really set up the structures that is really needed to help the family in their time of need. So that's it's a great benefit to the team and how we work together. These next slides I'll move through kind of quickly because what I really want to be able to talk to you about is the way that we've teaming together. So we take a very team-based approach. And what we've done is we've started the program. We've had a team of three therapists and one family support specialist that work together. And so at the time of case opening, there's always two people who are helping on that phone call. And it really helps the clinician to be able to do their immediate assessment of what's going on with the mental health risks that the family is facing. And then there's the family support specialist who's automatically there ready to even make linkages and referrals on day one. So it's a really great team-based approach. And what we're finding during this pandemic is that We already knew when we wrote our proposal to you how much we were going to need that family support specialist, but we have learned even more. The families we work with are very diverse, and we have people all the way from owning their own homes and having it paid off to people who are living in their cars. There's such a wide range of need with these families. And so we really, really are, in the last quarter in particular, really sort of specializing the roles on the team even further and trying to take full advantage of the family support specialist who can help with those linkages, which frees up the family therapist to work on the clinical needs. We're really proud of that model. And again, it helps so much with engagement. We want to talk a lot about what we've been doing so far. We are a really unique program in that we had our first admission in March, and then the shelter in place orders in Illinois happened the very next few days. So we have had to be really creative and really collaborative with each other and with our community partners to help our program to still be very successful. We did focus, as we had intended, from March through to June 30th on what we call front-end referrals. So, Jonathan, I know that you're here. I can't see you right now with the way that my screen works, but you were so helpful in getting us started with our first referral to our program. Thank you so much. But the Youth Assessment Center was our great focus in the very beginning, also working with the state's attorney, the JCA program, and the Public Defender's Office. And what that front-end referral meant was that we were working with youth who had not yet been adjudicated. And then when July 1st came, we opened up to invite referrals from all of juvenile probation and court services, and then also the juvenile detention center. And then around August or so, we moved into accepting families who were self-referring and then also linking more to community organizations, including school and many other creative organizations, which we'll show you more in a little bit. But that's the trajectory of how we move forward. And so at this point, we take all clients, anyone from totally prevention, never had a police contact ever, to people who have had multiple times at the juvenile detention center. And we have the same team serving those populations. And we like that approach because it gives perspective to the clinicians who are doing the work about insights that might be needed when you're working on more of a prevention case versus more of a higher end case. So it's great. It's great for learning and the way that we staff cases. This is a little bit of an overview of what the treatment process looks like. The first 1 to 2 months has to do with engagement, mental health assessment, treatment planning or support planning. Phase 2 is what we call a treatment or support plan. That's averaging 2 to 5 months so far. And then the last phase has to do with preparing for case closure. We also provide some aftercare to check on the families after cases are closed. This is where we want to really emphasize more about our pride and our engagement strategy. So I've already started to mention to you about how in those first 30 days, we're really working on linkages and building trust and sort of that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So when we meet their needs for food, clothing, shelter, healthcare, it establishes a really fast connection that helps us to meet other treatment goals. Muncie made a lovely slide here that gives you a little visual image of linkages that we have been making, and we actually track those in our database because we want to always, first of all, make sure that we are well wrapping these families with support in our community. And then also when we track our referrals and linkages, we teach each other about the resources that are out there. And so we measure this and track this and talk about this a lot. We want our families to, when they're done working with us, have far more resources at their fingertips and far more ways to solve their problems. So a lot of our referrals, because I think in part because of the COVID-19 pandemic, has had to focus a lot on housing. People were having hard times. People have lost wages. And so we did a lot of collaborating with the RPC, Emergency Shelter for Families, helping get people to link there. And then also we had a recent really success story of working with the Cunningham Township folks with that family who was sleeping in the car, and they were able to also get linked to a hotel temporarily by Cunningham Township, and then were able to make it into the Emergency Shelter for Families. And it's kind of like a 3-point step, right, that got them to the Emergency Shelter for Families. But somehow we were lucky enough to catch them first and get that started. Some of the examples of linkages we made for mental health have to do with, needing a sexual abuse assessment from ABC Counseling, needing some mental health services from Rosecrans, needing some adoption preservation support from the Babyfold. we had a young person who was having a first episode of psychosis. And so we were able to make a referral to LifeLinks, which is a federally funded program for people starting at age 14 to help to prevent further deterioration with psychosis. We've also made linkages for family who are having a child who is struggling with autism, let them know about TAP. We've had young people who we've referred to the Psychological Services Center to take advantage of the beautiful services that are offered there for mental health. We, of course, can provide that immediate, short-term, brief service, mental health services, but we always try to set them up with long-term versions. And so here's some examples of where we've sent folks. And then we've also done linkages to people that are in need of after-school care, some mentoring support. So these are some examples of places where we've made referrals. There's some people who, clients who are really struggling with the public school setting. We have a young man who just attended school for the first time that we're aware of during this pandemic. He just had his first week of school at Ready Program. We're so proud of that accomplishment. That's a good example of some of these linkages. I'll keep moving, but of course there'll be room for question and answer at the end. Our sessions with our families when we open a case, at the very minimum, it's 3 times per month, but I have to be honest with you, it's usually around 3 times per week. These families are having a lot of needs. And so there are a lot of services either shared between the family therapist or between the family support specialist to check on both the caregiver and the child. And we're really proud of that part of our treatment framework as well, because we don't want to just teach skills to a child in a vacuum. We want to teach the skills to the caregiver so that they can support that learning in the young person. So we're really proud of that. Now, where sessions have occurred is different than we planned when we first proposed. We had envisioned ourselves in the schools, right? And the schools hadn't been open for most of the time that we've been running the program. So we had to diversify. And of course, we've done a blend of telehealth, via Zoom or via telephone. And then we've also done in-person sessions in places that was available, places like the Juvenile Detention Center. We've been able to see clients there. And then Cunningham made some modifications to a building that we have. We dedicated it for a safe place to see families during the winter months. Our maintenance crew built a plexiglass shield along our conference room table so that it would be an even safer way to have in-person sessions. And of course, we still use masks and hand sanitizer and those things, but that plexiglass shield gives an extra level of comfort, which made a really big difference in engaging one of our most recent families. It's a teenage young woman who really needed in-person support, and we needed a safe way to do it. And so that solution, we're very proud to have been able to offer it to the family, and it made all the difference with them engaging with our services. We wanted to give you a little glimpse of the assessments that we landed on when we wrote, when we were here to see you in November of 2019, we hadn't yet chosen which exact assessment tools we wanted to use, and they were included as attachments to what you were sent tonight in the agenda. These are free to our use, so that's one of the strong points of this program. We chose to use a strengths difficulties questionnaire, and we have both the youth, the parent, there's also a teacher selection where we can measure sort of the risk and then the progress that the young people are showing. We also have been using the protective factor survey, and that really helps us get a sense of the needs of the family as a whole and what resources are they already aware of, which ones have they already taken advantage of, and then it helps us find right away which linkages we might need to use. And then there's the youth connection scale, and that's where we care so much about the section that talks about the strength and number of positive adults in the young person's life. And these three assessments that I've just pointed to, we do those at the beginning of treatment and then at the end. And so that's how we're measuring our outcomes. And then we have an incentive built into the families for taking their time to work with the assessments with us to help us to have more successful outcome data. And then I wanted to take the time to highlight the fourth assessment here, which we're really proud of. We actually created it. So when we sent our proposal to the Champaign County Mental Health Board, we had said that the ARC treatment framework, though we love it, they don't have a measurement. And so we actually made one. And we worked with our consultant, Dr. Rachel Liebman, and she was impressed with what we had created. We wanted a tool that would show the family's progress in learning the skills that we're teaching them back to that ARC house that I showed you. And so we included that as an attachment as well. So you can agency. We put a lot of labor of love into that. Muncie, who's with us tonight, is so good at making things beautiful. So she gets the credit for the aesthetics, absolutely. And then there was a team effort with the content. So thank you. I talked a little bit already about our COVID-19 strategies and how we have been able to find and reach and engage families anyway. But I would like to emphasize here that we are actually really proud of some of these strategies. We have found that in some manners, it's actually easier to engage families via telehealth services. We didn't anticipate that, but we actually found that it's true. These families are overwhelmed. Some of them are in real crisis, and they are very cooperative with taking phone calls or making phone dates with us, where there might have been a barrier to them driving and making it to an appointment. Now, when we made our proposal to the Champaign County Mental Health Board, we absolutely built in room to help with transportation costs. So we have that to mitigate as a risk as well, but we're really proud of the way that sometimes that's just what the family needs. They need it to be an easier ask of their engagement. And so who knows, even when this pandemic is over, there might be a telehealth component that we choose to keep in some circumstances. I'll be honest, our whole team is totally ready to be totally back to in-person as soon as possible. It's the way we like to work, but we're very proud of some of the advantages that we've found. And we'll continue to think creatively that way as we recover from this global pandemic. So the numbers that we've prepared to show you tonight, we've been able to serve 26 out of the 27 referrals that we've served or that we've received. The only reason why we didn't serve the 27th is because we are already serving that client in a different program that Cunningham offered. And the number of people who we were able to touch and help were 50 people in addition to those 26 that we served. And the reason why we mention it that way is because we also provide referrals and linkages for the family members. And so when we say we helped 26 clients, we actually mean we helped over 75 people, because there's sometimes small children that we're also impacting in the home that aren't, you know, maybe they're not old enough to be in our program. But in fact, that one of the TAP referrals that we made for the Autism Project, that was for someone who was too young to be our client, but we still made a linkage that would help meet that child's needs. And then we just made at least 45 linkages, and then we gave you a little breakdown about how some of those broke down. Those categories don't show everything. So those are the slides that we've prepared. Thank you for listening to me. This is time for questions and comments. And of course, as you know, there's four of us from Cunningham here tonight, but we'll do our best to answer. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. If you have questions, just go for it.
Thank you for this presentation. It was very informative, and I love what you guys are doing. I wish, you know, we could expand this to have it in schools and really hit more, make a bigger impact and reach more and more children and families. I was wondering, do you guys track to see, I mean, obviously you guys know if you're making progress with the children, but do you guys have data that you're following to see if like the grades are improving or if they have less interaction with like getting in trouble, whether it's like truancy or having to go back to the detention center for any specific reason?
Glad you asked that question. I was literally just talking with our director of quality improvement about this very thing yesterday, because when we wrote our program outcomes, we on purpose did not use those types of things as a measurement, because we wanted to focus so much on teaching skills and gaining skills, on trauma-informed caregiving, on co-regulation, self-regulation. However, we are also tracking that information. We care about it. And so the answer is yes. I did not prepare that data because it wasn't a part of what we talked about with our program outcomes, but it's really important to us. We want to know what progress they're making at school. We want to know, did we successfully avoid police contacts? Did we successfully avoid even psychiatric hospitalizations? So for one fast answer for you, I would say that our strengths difficulties questionnaire will be able to mark progress in school generally. We don't have a specific measurement that like shows progress in grades, but we track that. So the folks who are working on the team, the family therapist and the family support specialist, they're regularly collaborating with both teachers, school social workers. And so we are aware and are often in a position to advocate for the right kind of educational supports to occur. So for example, we have one case recently that we've been working on where we actually have helped the guardian to request a special education evaluation. So we're side by side in a lot of those kinds of things. And then in terms of the tracking of the other data, we do have room in our database to track it more specifically, but we definitely document it in our case notes, and then we staff it regularly in our weekly group supervision meetings.
That's excellent. Thank you for this information. Again, it looks like you're definitely meeting all your immediate goals, which is excellent. So I assume that, you know, down the line over time, you're going to meet those long-term end goals, which is great. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just have a comment. I just am really impressed by the having, you know, heard other presentations and been tracking you by the creativity and intelligence that has gone into reconceptualizing our interest in helping these families, because in the former program, before you got involved, it seemed to me every time I asked a question, somebody said, well, that's manualized, which meant it was in a manual, it was static, it was, you know, engraved in stone. So I think it was high time that it all was reconceptualized. And so I really commend you the way you've gone about this, and from all kinds of different angles. I really like that. Thank you.
Elaine, this is Pat. I greatly appreciate that, having been in that front end part. Mm-hmm. And I give Julia Reitz a lot of credit, because she wanted us to focus on what skills are the families using so they can broaden, to the rest of the family and be able to take skills and move them forward and feel healthier about their decisions and all those pieces, which is hard to evaluate, as all we know.
Yes.
So that's a real, real important piece. And the other aspect I want to just kind of broach a little bit from John's comment is that we've had some not ethical conflicts, but some conflicts between the advocacy we feel like we need to do in court. That we want to try to not get too far down that rabbit hole, because we want to really be careful about our roles. But we had some pretty serious conversations with our consultant about, gosh, we just, you know, this child shouldn't go anywhere. They should stay right here. And we were making some progress. So we're grappling with that. And I think we're that's a good thing to grapple with. That shouldn't be something we're afraid of. So I think, and you can see in Marie and the team, they have that kind of mindset of keeping not just the clinical piece, but the whole family and the family in the community. And it, for a fairly young program, I've personally been very impressed with the work that they've been able to do through COVID as well. But you're bringing in some really high points that are a challenge to the group.
Yeah, and I think, Ben, going back with the history of what Cunningham and the community has tried to do is to, when there is an identified child, it's not just the child. The family is, the child is the identified symptom within the larger family system. And from what Marie and you guys are describing is that, yes, you'll work with the child, but the family is important. And that unit is important to provide them with all the services that they need in order to maintain their place within the larger community. And that's excellent. Thank you. Julian, you're muted.
Sorry. Thank you for a very well-organized, compelling presentation. And I guess my question is just that I would like some, maybe you can help me understand what you presented seems to me to be the ideal integrated clinical and outreach services program, that putting everything together that everybody has ever thought about good social work, human services one might do. So my question is, I guess it's a conceptual question, and I'm just wondering how you think about this, is what does calling it trauma-informed mean? How is that different than if I did exactly the same things, but I didn't call it trauma-informed? What would I be doing differently?
Oh, Julian.
That's so beautiful. I welcome the question. What I would say, first of all, is when we say trauma-informed, it keeps us away from that scapegoating that happens in the family, right? Fix this kid. If you fix this kid, everything will be better, right? The black sheep, right? And so when we take a trauma-informed approach, we don't let labels stick on anyone, right? And we think about what must that child be going through. So we have one young person who really had been doing quite well, and then school shut down due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and he made a series of terrible choices. Sorry to say terrible, that sounds judgmental, but this young guy is actually now at the Department of Juvenile Justice, which is really, really sad, right? So those are not what you want. But along the way, when we were working with this family and trying to intervene, we were trying to help the caregivers to have empathy about what he actually is going through as his structure and support network at school disappeared. And it really helped the caregiver's view of the child to soften, and it actually helped inroads for the real treatment work to occur. Now, by the time we had met him, the charges had already been, incurred, right? And then the sentencing happened the way that it did. But I do believe that along the way, we are able to update the family's narrative about what was going on. And so that's my best answer on the fly, Julian. Thank you.
I can put it simply as, instead of saying what's wrong with you, mm-hmm. it's saying what happened to you to me. To bring you to this point, and coming to that person that way, it makes a difference on how you treat them and how you treat the situation. So.
And the other part is what's still happening to you. One of the first pieces they do the team does is, you know, if there's a crisis, they deal with that first, and they focus on the caregiver, who sometimes has had historical trauma that they're going through, and they don't understand and see some of the same trauma that's going on with their own child. And so it really is, you know, what's happened to you and what is happening to you now that needs to be kind of settled or stabilized so that you're able to manage what you're dealing with here.
Thank you.
The formulation of what happened to you instead of what's wrong with you is the exact task that our team took up when we made the decision to not include diagnoses, but if they weren't needed for eligibility, we find that we get so much more done by avoiding that conversation. We're a brief service, right? So we're supposed to be in and out of the family's life fairly quickly and provide long-term therapists who can do that meeting medical necessity work, right? So we avoid some real trappings that way. And we talk trauma every time we talk with them, and it's helped. And that charge came from Dr. Bruce Perry. I don't know if that's where you got the phrase, but when we read his book and have done his trainings, he challenged us that when possible, see if you cannot use diagnoses. So we took up that challenge, and I think it's really helped us to stay very trauma-informed.
Thanks for that explanation. I think that what you're doing is, I hope what you're doing is what I understand to be really the creation of a new narrative that helps us, helps families, helps kids to escape from really the overlearned, probably wrong psychologizing and of things that almost seem like psychological common sense because of the way we always wanted to talk about what's wrong with the kids. And we have names for it, and we have labels for it. And so you're providing, I think, helping to develop a new narrative, which is incredible. That's great. I'm really pleased to hear that. Thank you so much.
welcome. And your feedback touches me, Julian. And I think, you know, I took a long time to get into a leadership role at Cunningham, and it feels like a celebration of thoughts that I've been carrying around in me for some time. And it's really nice to get to step into that and take up that space. And so I humbly say that this is a team effort, but I have to say, Julian, I'm really excited that you are excited about the parts I am excited about too.
And Marie, I mean, I remember it was 1997 or 98 when you were, I think, that's when I first met you. And yes, there's been an evolution, and Pat has stayed steady. She's been there. Any other questions or comments? No, I mean, we need to approve the agenda. Can we do that now? I know we're done, but motion to approve the agenda.
Anybody? I still move.
Okay. I'll second it. Okay. Any board announcements that we have? But this has been good. Thank you very much for the presentations from the Christian Counseling and Christian Health Center and from Cunningham. Lots of C's, but thank you. So we have to move to adjourn the session. Is that who will make that motion?
I'll motion to move to adjourn the session.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Hey, thank you very much, and have a wonderful rest of the evening. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone.